servant. His servitude is proof of the Lord's mercy. Galad quotes the phrase, Kapitatir Bhakti, in a famous verse. Quote, Rikshit became perfect simply by hearing, the son of Vyas by chanting, Galad by remembering, and Lakshmi by serving the Lord's feet. Prithvi became work perfect by deity worship, Akura by offering prayers, and the chief of the monkeys by acting as a servant. Arjuna attained perfection by friendship, and Bali by surrendering everything he owned. How then can there be one description of what it means to be a devotee of the Lord? End quote. In Srila Sanatana Goswami's opinion, Sridhar Swami's interpretation of the word Bastion as, quote, offering the Lord the fruits of one's work, only partially describes Hanuman's relationship with Lord Ram. Srila Sanatana Goswami says that Dasyam, rather, should be understood to indicate the perpetual relationship of loving service, an exalted variety of transcendental love. Dasya is complete service. It involves all the senses, even on the physical level, just as all the senses of the physical body are purified by a bath. They're naturally engaged by a devotee's absorption in Dasyara. Therefore, a relationship of servitude like Hanuman can be said to be superior to mere remembrance of the Lord. The Lord considered his own service as smarn, inferior, because it is only an inner activity of the mind. Om jnana simaram bhasya jnanam jana sarakaya Satsurim Ritam Yena Vajnai Sri Gurave Namaha Sairajya Yud Bhakti Rusham Priyasnai Apayama Manadipsanandam Kutam Bhriya Paradurka Bhuti Sanatanastam Padamastriyami Vancha Kalpa Perubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaivacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudeva Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. This will be the last Wednesday class in Vrindavan. I'll have one more Sunday class. I'm doing Briya Bhagavatamrita on Saturday, and because on Sunday, and because I was teaching it regularly, and we're kind of in a transition of topics that I'm going to speak on, I continued it on Wednesday, but we're going to reserve the discussion of this text to Sunday, and I'm going to start the Yoga Sutras on Wednesday, which I'm pretty excited about. I already started preparing some of the classes, and I think the information, and I think the way I'll present it in relation also to devotional practice, I think it'll be very, very relevant to the devotees. Gauri Jam Prabhu said, a good class is where you learn at least one thing. I sometimes think he was commenting on the quality of classes that you're sitting in, but you know, when I'm studying the Yoga Sutras, every time I pick up it, I'm learning many new things. It's the same subject matter, because we have that in Krishna consciousness. We have Kapila Sankhya. We have a discussion of Sankhya in the Bhagavad Gita. We do cultivate Jnana, for the purpose of detachment, just so that we can be more focused and absorbed in devotional service. One second, can I come here? Hare Krishna, who is it? Arnav? So that we've become more absorbed. Gaudiya also spoke a lot, you know, the body and the nature of the mind. But the detail and the study of it, I think, is relevant. And another thing about this class that will be nice, and I have this kind of inspiration, in my outreach to share teachings of Prabhupada to others, I'm starting to develop relationships with people who are not devotees, but who are interested in spiritual life, and who have attraction to devotion. it's actually quite enlivening to do so. In fact, I got a letter today from one lady who wrote, I've enjoyed another dozen entries of the journal and I'm amazed by the interplay of humanity and the divinity of the entries. Is it all right if I share portions with friends? And then she writes, I very much like to hear, read your teachings on the Yoga Sutras, so please forward my mail to the facilitator. With your permission, I'd like to take the opportunity to share the opportunity with my yoga teacher. He's enjoying your website. Off to make tea, read more, and think of spring. So I think there's an opportunity to also, but I don't think that all dumbs down the subject matter, because I think this is a shared subject matter for all spiritual traditions of the mechanics of exactly how the mind works. And of course, I'll always discuss it in relationship to our tradition. So I'm kind of looking forward to that. Now, here in the Srinath Bhagavatamrita, I'll say something about it today, and hopefully we'll have a lot of time for questions. Let me just get my frame of reference here. Okay, see. So, this Srinath Bhagavatamrita, the Prabhupada said, you know, one way, he encouraged the devotees to look at a subject and discuss it from different angles. Discussing things from different angles, it's kind of like if you have an axe and you want it to be sharpened, you know, you have to hit it against the grinding stone in different angles. And depth of understanding, Prabhupada realized, works in that way also. You have one objective, but just like you hit it from different angles, the axe, but there's one objective, and that's to sharpen the axe. So the same thing, there's one objective to have a clear understanding of reality, a clear perception of it. But by looking at it from different perspectives, your understanding of what you're viewing becomes clear. So a great philosophers do that. They take one subject matter and take it in different contexts. And by taking it in different contexts, you begin to understand it in a clearer way. I had that had that realization when I think it was 81 in December, oh my God, that was almost 26, 27 years ago, I was in Mayapur in December, and at that time there was no conflict between ISKCON and Gaudiya Math. And a friend of mine who I came to visit in Mayapur, he said, you know, I'm going across the river to Navadvip. Would you like to meet Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Srila Sridhar Maharaj? And I said, yes. Yeah. So I came there, and I have to say very frankly, as Bori John said, you know, we were so young and we got these positions. I was the regional secretary of education to India. I mean, pains me to think of my lack of qualification at the time. But Bori John said, you know, ISKCON in one sense was the Lord of the Flies, if you ever read that. Ravindra Saruprabhu made a very astute analysis of the nature of ISKCON in the early days, in the way only he could do. He said the problem with ISKCON, the problem was here, is that he was the only adult. And there was some truth to that. You know, I always remember the story. I think Guru Kripa told me this. He took sannyasa, I think when he was 20 years old or 21 or some ridiculously young age, and they took it here in India. The Papa even said that, you know, my godbrothers criticized me. I said they were right in this regard, you know, that, you know, I gave sannyasa to so many young people. But then Prabhupada said, quoted a Bengali proverb, he said, when there's no trees in the forest, the castor oil tree lives thick. So, you know, castor oil is very, very small, but it's relative. So Prabhupada had no leaders, he had no divisions in society, and he made them. And therefore he had to naturally, in his mission, put young people in positions of authority. So I remember Guru Kripa and they tell me, so they took sannyasa and they thought, we're going to conquer all the philosophies, all the six different philosophies of India. So they went, and they went to this page of the Swami, who was the Acharya of Madhva, one of the Acharyas, and one of the most famous Acharyas. And they're so strict, because they're so selective in sannyas, that they can only bathe in a holy river or a holy place. You know, they can only eat. You know, it's just so strict. So I think Guru Kripa told me, or I don't know, maybe it was one of them told me, they looked at Pedro Swami and challenged him, I think in a French-Canadian accent, maybe you saw it on that. What are the true aspects of the absolute truth? And they said, this distinguished Swami just started to be amused, but maybe appreciating the enthusiasm. So I remember I went to see Sridhar Maharaj, and there weren't many people there. And, you know, kind of, I was introduced as the principal of the Gurukul. I mean, you know, I was 31 years old at the time, you know. But I had an upadhi. I had a designation. And I remember Sridhar Maharaj, he was sitting on a chokhi. It's a little wood bed up on his porch. He's really detached, a great philosopher. You know, he immediately asked me, you know, how is Pradyumna? How is Pradyumna? So good. We all loved him. And then he said to me, and then they said, the prince of the Gurukul, and then he said, the Gurukul, the ancient Indian system of education. And then it was a spiritual ecstasy, an intellectual ecstasy to hear him speak. And then he said, Gurukul, the ancient system of Indian education. And then, you know, he took it not only in the context of history, he took it in the context of modern philosophy. It was like a trip around the intellectual universe with this concept. I was stunned about the 45 minutes. And then after that, he said, please take some prasadam. And then he began to discuss prasadam tattva. You know, the nature of spiritual food, what makes something spiritual, the benefit. So I understood something, too, about someone who has that scholarly bent. And why Prabhupada said you have to look at things from different angles. And he wanted the devotees to discuss. The Bhagavad Gita is actually a classic example of how that works, because what we're focused on is the essence of the Bhagavatam, which is really pure devotional service, which is the nature of the soul, which is energized by a shakti or potency of God. And as I've been mentioning in these classes, that you have to just get the context of this potency, that this is the potency that gives God pleasure, which means this is what attracts God. So if you have that kind of devotion in your heart, energized by God's own potency to assist you in that spiritual consciousness, it's the most attractive thing in the world, because it's the existential attractive shakti or potency. So we're studying it, and we're studying it in different devotees who manifest different degrees of that potency and different flavors of that potency. And we're not only seeing that manifest in that progressive way, which holds our conception of what the real essence of this potency, this devotion to God, and enthuses us to attain it. We're not only looking at it in that way, but at the same time, we are seeing each devotee that Narada meets on his trip from different angles. Because you first perceive the devotee from the previous devotee who's recommending to Narada Muni to see that, you know, to go to that person. So you get this kind of description. That's what we hear right now. We're getting the Prahlad description of Hanuman. And there's nothing more potent than the description of devotion by the devotee. The highest type of hearing, it's mentioned in Bhakti Sandhava, is to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. And of that hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam, it's best to hear by a pure devotee. So, because you have someone who can see reality, there's a concept in yoga psychology that as long as the mind has passion or ignorance, the mind becomes distorted, and therefore you can't perceive things properly, no matter how you try. And the idea would be of viewing, because the concept is that the soul is seeing the world through the lens of the material mind. And if that lens is distorted, then what you see becomes distorted. Or if the mirror has dust, then what you see in the mirror becomes distorted. One thing you don't see is yourself. And when you don't see yourself properly, you can't see other things properly. Because if you're in ignorance about yourself, then how are you going to be able to have a proper understanding and relationship with things externally? So, unless the mind becomes, and so the idea is that when you perceive things, it's almost if that object, the mind takes on the shape of that object. But if the mind itself is distorted, the shape of the object would be distorted. So there's a conception of pure perception really needs a level of purity and goodness. So you're seeing the vision of devotion from someone who can actually see it without prejudice. So you're seeing that, and then you're seeing the person from the perspective of Narada, who goes to see the person. And then generally there's a scene where that person that is recommended, the particular devotee we're focusing on, is doing his devotional activities, and Narada Muni sees that person. And then you really see the person's heart and that person responds. So now we're getting this preliminary description of Hanuman. And it's describing first His fortune, that in terms of devotion, he's somehow, because the other factor is that what Narada Muni is searching for is the essence of the Supreme Lord's mercy. So the essence of the Supreme Lord's mercy is devotion. So he wants to see that devotion, how it's manifest in a person's heart. So, it got lost here again. Let me just see for a second. Usually I just go on. So, let me take me a second. I think I got it in my mind there. So Narada first sees so one characteristic of that mercy is to actually be given the service of that person. That's mercy. To actually be given the service of the person and to be given the association of the person. That's also mercy. That's also mercy. So in comparison to himself, Prahlad is saying, look at the service Hanuman has and look at the association Hanuman has. I'm just meditating. And meditation is like a distant type service. I'm thinking of the Lord. I got to see him briefly when he came to kill my father in those extraordinary circumstances. But I wasn't actually had much association with him. And I really wasn't doing much service in that way. I guess we could say direct service, because he was ruling the kingdom, etc. We discussed that before. And then Prahlad begins to describe the vibhutis or the potencies of Hanuman. But again, it's very important. It's not really the vibhutis that are being, the vibhutis mean opulence. It's not really the opulence that's being described, but the devotion that's being described. When the opulences one has is being used in devotional service, rather than in the service of one's own ego and sense gratification. And that's a very, very glorious thing. When you have so much, but you don't claim possessiveness for it, because you're in the consciousness of a servant. Mother, she, sometimes I talk comes to my class, and she's going for it spiritually. And few of us, including myself, are on that level just to dive in and just chant all day and chant and cultivate your relationship with Krishna with different. Anyway, she came and we're talking, and this is also nice. Tomorrow, just before I go, I move into my bhajan kutir here in Govardhan. And it's really the first place I've ever had. I'm happy too. I've been in Vrindavan, and I get nice places to stay, but I approach them in a detached mood. It's just blessings to be in Vrindavan, wherever I am. I shouldn't get into the details of, wanting more. Whatever Krishna gives me, I should be satisfied with. And I tried to live there, especially this way, for the last 10 years. And in the West also, now I have a little room upstate. It's by the mercy of Sachi Sukha and Tevi Rupa, a little partner, which is nice. But this is actually being given to me fully. And it's also nice. It will never be in my name. I'm not going to be able to pass it on to further generations, but my own place. Do what you want with it. And my friend Parthasarthi Das Goswami arranged it for me. I guess some of his disciples, very kindly. So there's one person fixing it up, and evidently it's just really come out very, very beautiful. There's a park. It's hard to describe. There's a park right in front of it. But I think it must be about a half acre or something. But it is thin. And they're making it like a coutier with these cow dung walls. And it just seems like it's going to be a suitable place when I come to Govardhan to meditate. And she told me in her place, her mood is, it's not her place, she has Govardhan Shilas. When anybody, person comes to visit her, she sometimes hires these Bengali ladies to help clean and do something. They first have to offer, respects to her deity and greet her deity, and then they can greet her. So it's a consciousness when you have a deity. To free oneself from possessiveness, which is one of the purposes of deity worship. It's to reorient your consciousness spiritually. And reorienting your consciousness spiritually, I've mentioned this many, many times, but I think is that to become an object. An object to someone else's desires. Where generally, we look at things as objects of our own desires. And that's how we look at our house. This is kind of a shift, a reorientation. Anyway, so we're looking at Hanuman through the eyes of Prahlad. And seeing, this is very interesting too, seeing a person through the eyes of another enables you to actually also see what the person is like whom you're seeing the other person through. In other words, I see that all the time. I have a vision of a person, and then I get a vision of that person through another person. And I can see that person's consciousness. You know, I mean, you can see what his heart is. And you can see the person's envy. You know, I mean, it's how you present other people, you know, it reveals a lot about yourself, you know, your level of discrimination, your sentiments, your devotional understanding, your Vaishnav nature. So, of course, we see Prahlad's humility when he's describing Hanuman. So then I was describing these vibhutis. Yes, that, now I got back to the point. These vibhutis are these powers, are these opulences. It's so great when one has them and does not claim possessiveness for them. Sees that they are gods and meant to be used in God's service. Then those vibhutis or opulences become so glorious. And His Holiness Narayanmaraj used to tell me that when he used to visit Prabhupada, who was staying in the Keshavaji Gaudiya Math, and he said, you know, Prabhupada was very poor after he just renounced household life. And Narayanmaraj would sit on Prabhupada's bed and discuss Shastra with him. And Narayanmaraj would take off his uttariya and put it on the bed to cover the holes in the quilt. But he was always amazed that Prabhupada liked to discuss the Pandavas. That although the Pandavas were the kings of the world, they really felt the kinship of Gosha. They felt completely non-possessive because they were such great devotees. When you're a great devotee, your consciousness is reoriented. You see yourself as a servant. And a servant doesn't claim possessiveness for anything. He sees everything as the property of his master. So you see this with Hanuman, the Vibhutis. It's very attractive. I should mention today that today is, at least here in Vrindavan, it's probably not yet there, it's the disappearance festival of His Holiness Srila Kunal Krishna Goswami, a very dear godbrother of mine, a dear disciple of Prabhupada. I will go for a small feast, myself and Kasturba and his wife, and his very nice devotee, Charu Chandra. He's going to come to New York and teach yoga. He's a mystic. He's actually a mystic. I have a very nice relationship. He came to see me. He's a very extraordinary person, but definitely a mystic. And a very successful yoga teacher in Hong Kong and Australia, was coming to New York City. Very successful. The people that he teaches yoga to, I don't know, they have names, but very prestigious people. Anyway, we're going to go to Gopal Raju's, Gopal Raju's Tamal Krishna Maharaj's cook. And of course, that was, he's very expert in seeing to those arrangements. But I'll just tell one favorite story I have about Tamal Krishna Maharaj. When Iron Marge came to Bombay for the court case, Prabhupada's son was suing ISKCON. Indian law is the son is the legal heir to his father's property unless the father has a will. So Prabhupada's son claimed that he was the heir to ISKCON and all its assets. And somehow or other, I don't know why, but there was some problems with Prabhupada's will, which was done here in Mathura. I actually went to the house of the lawyer with Prabhupada once, where Prabhupada did a program. I mean, many devotees went, and there was like radio and everything. And so to prove that Prabhupada took sannyas, Narayan Maharaj came to Bombay to testify because he was the priest for the yogi and Prabhupada took sannyas. And for one, this is one reason why we kind of, I don't want to promote one side or another, but it's a fact that he was a little disappointed. Anyway, but he did a lot. He felt maybe it should have been reciprocated more, but he went to fight for this guy. So he would go into the courts every day. You have to write an hour, and you have to sit in the courts, and he did that for a month as a service. And in the morning, he was staying in the Juhu temple, and he would come down, and he would greet the deities. But he saw that Tamal Krishna Maharaj was always meditating on Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman. So he was kind of wondering, Narayan Maharaj, why Tamal Krishna Maharaj was always meditating on Ram as a Gaudiya Vaishnava. Gaudiya Vaishnava means we worship Radha and Krishna. And we aspire for Vrajabhakti in Vrindavan, not a yoga. He just puzzled every day Tamal Krishna Maharaj would be standing in front of Sita, Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman. And I heard Narayan Maharaj say this myself. And then Narayan Maharaj said, I asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj, but I was puzzled. I said, why are you worshipping Lord Ram? And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, I'm not worshipping Lord Ram. I'm meditating on it. I'm praying to his weapons. And Narayan Maharaj was saying, and he understood because he saw, he had to sit there, and he saw Tamal Krishna Maharaj fighting in the court. The case was actually that Tamal Krishna Maharaj had usurped, the son of the property of the son because he was Prabhupada's, secretary or servant, And that he saw every day how expert the Mahakrishna Mahaj was fighting and answering the questions. And he said, I'm meditating on the weapons. And then Narayan Mahaj said, and I heard him, he said, I learned Guru Nishtha from the Mahakrishna Mahaj. So it's an example. He had three gurus, he had powers, extraordinary powers, extraordinary intellectual capacity, extraordinary. It's extraordinary practical intelligence. He gave it to Prabhupada 24 hours a day. That was very glorious. He was also, I could speak the whole class, but it's nice to glorify him. I feel very happy about that because I was very close with him. And in fact, the year that he unfortunately passed away, I spent time in Cambridge with him. I think it was Oxford with him. Just before he went to the GBC meetings, and he stopped his work and asked my advice, actually, on what he should do there, because he hadn't been there in 5 years. And I gave some suggestions, which he followed, and in one sense, tradition still continues. Yes, I told him he should have kirtans at night. He had kirtans in his room at night, and they do that now every year there. I was going to speak about something else. Anyway, somehow my mind is... I can't remember what I was going to say. Anyway, a very extraordinary soul that used everything in Prabhupada's service. And performed very, very intimate service. Okay. Now, here in this verse, Prahlad is discussing about Hanuman, about his service as Dasya. And there's 9 items of devotional service. And basically what it means is how you engage the senses in absorption in God, for God's pleasure. So there's many items, and there's 9 main items, and each of the items has an exemplar. And the exemplar of Dasyam is Hanuman. And of course, that mood of service is so strong that one doesn't want to become liberation means nothing. Because if you have a mood of service, where the service is becomes the place you want to be. Regardless of what the external environment is like. And your view of the external environment actually changes if you find service in that place. Narayana Parasade Nakutas Chanya Dibyati Swaga Pavada Narate Shirapati. The one who is Narayana Parayana, who has deep love for God, he doesn't care where he is. As long as he can serve. In our heavenly earth, now the idea is service. And here, the commentators, again, looking at it from different angles, look at service in different ways. They look at service in different ways. And one is to give the fruits of your activity to God, offering the Lord the fruits of your work. But here, other commentators say that that's not the real That's not the real benefit. But the real benefit is, the real benefit is to be in the mood of a servant, and a servant means one who gives everything to God. And you look at everything as God, and therefore you engage everything. And it's just like you take a bath to purify the body, but the real purification of the body is service. And if you engage everything in service, everything is purified. Everything is purified. And therefore, because it's Prahlada saying this is better than what I did, because only my mind is engaged. And if only your mind is engaged, and you can't stay at the level of yoga, and yoga means, first of all, there's five states of the mind. And only the last two states of concentration and restraint are actually yoga. It's not technically yoga if your mind is wandering and distracted, sometimes focused, sometimes not, sometimes focused. That's not actually yoga. And at least on the mechanical platform, that won't have the desired effect of removing the obstacles to pure meditation. So, when you're trying to achieve that process of yoga, when the mind becomes distracted, it means it becomes distracted and you become aware of the senses. And if the senses are not purified, the senses will drag the mind to further distraction. So here, in that sense, Dasya Raksa is considered better because everything is engaged. And it begins not just with an engagement of the senses and mind, but real item of Dasya means a change in identity. And once you have that change in identity as a servant, then when that change of identity as a servant is there, then everything else is automatically purified. Because you're viewing things that way, because you're in that conception, then automatically the senses are controlled. So anyway, this is a little bit about Hanuman Bhakti. Are there any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna.
This is Gail.
Hi, Gail.
I don't know if I had heard you properly, but when you said that if it's only the mind that's, you know, engaged in service, then that's not as good as if something else.
I'll read what is written here. Okay.
I'm gonna mute my phone. Okay, Maharaj, because it's noisy here.
Okay.
Okay.
Therefore, a relationship of servitude like Hanuman's can be said to be superior to mere remembrance of the Lord. Prahlad considers his own service as small and inferior because it is only an inner activity of the mind. So the commentary is supporting Prahlad's view that Hanuman is better. But you have to understand, it's supporting a context of servitude that's better than remembrance. Later in the Bhagavatamrita, when it also discusses the superiority of kirtan, because kirtan engages the senses, it also makes the point that the goal is remembrance. So they're ultimately kirtan and smarnam are the same if they both reach the level of remembrance. But the problem with smarnam is if one is not fixed at a high level of yoga or remembering, and he begins.
I'm sorry, yeah. I wonder. I'm sorry.
You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of what a yogi, it must be like with a yogi. Like I was on pure concentration with no distraction, and then that's what yoga, then when the mind wanders, everything comes in. So it was kind of like that. But, you know, so what happens is at that level of kirtan and, you know, and smarana, they're the same dimensions because the goal is remembrance. But the advantage of kirtan is if you're not on that platform and therefore the mind wanders, in kirtan, the senses are also engaged in being purified. So even if the mind wanders, the mind is wandering within a level of absorption of Krishna consciousness. But in smarana and meditation, once the mind breaks, then one has to go to threats of sense gratification. So that's the same thing that's being presented here. That it's not wholesale superior, but there is a superior aspect to it. Okay? Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
By the way, where are you, Gail?
Oh, I'm at Brooklyn Temple Maharaj. Indrajana Maharaj was here today.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. And Sri Prahlad's favorite devotee.
Okay.
I'm just hearing for the first time, I guess, this distinction between, you know, remembrance and the concept of, you know, thinking oneself the servant, you know. And yeah. It seems like that's what they're making a distinction there between smarana and thinking oneself the servant. And thinking oneself the servant, you think, is higher. Because if you think yourself the servant, then anything you do is service. But if you're just remembering, then you're only doing service while you're remembering Krishna. And when you're not remembering, then, you know, then
right.
That service
yes.
is broken, right?
Yes, you got it, Gail. Okay.
Okay.
Thank
you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Maharaj?
Yes.
This is Rasika from Austin. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
What chapter and verse are you on?
Okay, I'm sorry if I didn't say that. This is 51 of chapter 4 of part 1, finding the essence of the Lord's mercy.
Yeah, okay? Thank you.
Thanks.
Wonderful class. Thank you.
And anybody else? Okay. Anybody you'd like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Govardhan.
I know, Govardhan, yeah. I'll be in Jersey next week. Okay. I've also got your letter. I'm looking for a date to do a program at your house, too. Okay, thank you. Wow. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, we'll end for today. Okay, thank you all. Panchakopa Kalidyascha Kudasindhi Vayudhacha Kapitanam Pabhanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo.